So, Otto, when you know when a new client comes to you and is unfit and has never been fit, or has been decades since they've ever, you know, had a fit, healthy lifestyle or good nutrition, how do you decide how to inspire them or to engage them in a way that doesn't throw too much stuff at them right at the beginning, but makes it, gives them ownership of their own path, while at the same time still motivating them towards fitness?
Well, the main thing that I'm trying to point out is that it's a journey that will be a long journey, because you know, you don't want to do the weight loss for 1 month and then quit for half year, because you revert so quickly, it's unbelievable. Even such a simple things as coming for holidays for 10, 15 days, and I can already feel how my fitness changed from where I was teaching all the classes to then just being struggling with everything as a huge difference. So what I do, I just try to make people to enjoy their sessions. I first try to see what their personality is like, because some people might appear to be very shy, some people might be appearing to be quite closed, and they need to first build a trust, because I can see that, you know, from day to day when we meet on a first consultation, when they might make a decision to hire me, they might have completely different mindset and emotional situation than when they meet me in for training session. They might be again a little bit kind of skeptical. Did I do the good decision? Didn't I just wasted money? Is this the right trainer? Will it be too hard? All those questions they might have. So I try to sort of observe them and first try to be an expert for them so they can trust me. So what I do first, I show off a little bit with all of my scientific stuff that I will just make sure that they know that I know, so they can trust me and calm down with sort of having silly expectations from the sessions. And then as the sessions are progressing, I'm trying to make them to enjoy the sessions, to feel like this is doable. And also explaining them that, you know, when it's enough to step in the set, how hard to push before the technique goes into danger zone. So that's my approach, to really observe people. And I think it quite helped me that I'm always very sensitive. I always being very sensitive, and it actually wasn't making me a favor. But now in this profession, I actually feel I can tune into the people's feeling.
And I suppose, you know the gym very, it's your natural environment.
I was born in the gym.
Joking. There was an accident on the parallel bars somewhere and suddenly you popped out. Yeah, I understand. But, you know, the key thing is that, yeah, you it's like chatting somebody up. If you make them relax and listen to them, that's usually the two key elements, isn't it? Like, if you can make someone laugh or relax or empathize with them and then find out why they're in front of you. You know, why do they choose to take a personal trainer in the first place? And is it because, like, you know, I'm always tired or no time for, you know, playing with my kids. I'm always just out of breath or something like that. And then, you know, they've personalized their mission already. And then you've got something very powerful to remind them of when the work starts in the gym. I think, like, you know, personal training is like a form of consultancy.
It is.
And they always say that, you know, like the first time you meet a client, it's basically about mirroring the client and asking the client stuff that, you know, brings out what their real interests are. You know, they might tell you, oh, I'm interested in getting fit, but it might be
weight loss.
Yeah, it might be weight loss or it
to
might be
better,
you know, fear
better.
Of dying young or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I see this all the time. I even spoke to a person who was extremely overweight. It was a lady, maybe 25 years old.
Yeah.
Her BMI was 35.4.
Yeah.
That's on obese level.
Yeah.
And when I was asking what her goal is, and she just told me that she just wants to run faster, to be able to run marathons faster.
Yeah.
But she didn't even mention she wants to lose weight.
Yeah.
And I obviously, this is weird. Yeah. 25 years old girl, a lady, which was extremely overweight and obese, and she's running. I mean, deep inside, I would say, wow, she shouldn't even be running with extra 3 stones of weight on her, you know, or more, because she was only around 165, 170 centimeters tall. So this is, you know, not very tall person. And, you know, then in her mind, she didn't even mention it. But then I knew that's what she wants. That's the main one. That's why she runs.
It's such a sensitive subject. She didn't even want to broach it with you in the first session.
Exactly. And that's why I knew that I have to be sensitive to her and also be very supportive and also kind of give her that sort of sense of hope we can handle this.
Yeah.
But in the same time, I want to point out that, you know, I don't want to be a messenger of negative news, but considering now your BMI number, I think that's considered obese, and I think it would be good thing to do to lose a little bit of weight. What do you think? And then, yeah, you're right. And but it sometimes people might feel shy or ashamed to say and admit certain things. So, yeah, there's a little bit of sense of, yeah, behind the lines, what we can feel, but you know,
I remember coming to you and, you know, you were asking me what my motivations were, and I was saying, you know, I want to get the weight off and stop packing around, and you rolled in between behind my vision for myself very quickly, in that, like, it felt like we were a team very early on, and I think that, you know, a lot of maybe less sensitive or aware personal trainers would kind of come down dictatorially, you need to do this and this. And I think what you did was very clever, in that you asked me why, and then you rolled in behind my vision for myself. Do you know what I mean? And I think there's a lot of personal trainers that they might know spiels about nutrition or, you know, exercise plans or sleep plans, but the key thing is you have to personalize it for the client. Like, the best way to persuade your boss about your idea is to fool them into thinking it's their idea. And it's the same with the client, that, you know, if it's their plan, they're already looking to hire you, so they know that there's something they can approve. But then if you get them to tell them their vision for themselves, you've got a very potent thing to row in behind. And then everything is explained, like, you know, you need to do more rowing than running in order to achieve your goal, is a much more diplomatic way of saying that, like, you're gonna have no knees left if you keep running like this before we get the weight off you, kind of thing. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
You see, I've been working with different coaches.
Yeah.
One of my friends and mentors, Michelle.
Yeah.
Which she passed last year with a tragical accident.
Oh.
She was a huge inspiration to me, because she was like a life coach and lifestyle guide, as she would call herself.
Yeah.
And Michelle offered once a free session consultation.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always watched her on Facebook and really was interested into what she was teaching, and I wouldn't ever hire anyone with money. Mm-hmm. So I'd say, okay, it's free session, I'll try it. It's a typical marketing strategy. Mm. Offer free session and try to get them to get more.
Yeah.
And I realized that she was really nice, nice. And very knowledgeable, very encouraging. And it was big psychology and communication.
Yeah.
And I realized that she was just rephrasing what I was saying.
Yeah.
So I actually come up with my self-realization, what I want.
Yeah.
Because it's not her or any life coach to tell you what you should be doing with your life. They ask you questions, and then, well, you keep asking right questions, you self-realize with the right answers.
Mm.
And this is what I actually found out with personal trainings, is that, you know, it's not me wanting them to lose weight.
Mm.
It's like, how may I help you today? My name is Otto.
Mm.
Yeah. What is your main goal? And yeah. So it's just really figuring out where they are at the moment, where they want to go.
Mm.
And if I can be a catalysator to help them to get there, if I see they keep canceling every second session, they might have problems with commitment and motivation and productivity. Maybe they're tired. Maybe they have some health issues. Maybe they don't really know what they really want. Maybe they're like halfway between quitting and kind of coming back to senses. So different people have very, very unique personalities as well to deal with. So I think... And I personally care. I really do care about every of my clients and people I work with because it's my interest to help them. And I really feel good when somebody can take what I teach and take it to the next level and own it. Like you, for example, that you're rolling your own game now. It's not me helping you. It's just actually you helping me now with the content, with the discussion. But it makes me feel good when I know that I help someone and that someone can influence other people. So that's the mindset.
Yeah, the thing I remember from our early sessions was, you know, you'd kind of come up and you'd have, you know, a sort of body posture. You'd clap the hands. You'd say, right, what are we doing today then? And it would be kind of like, you know, I'd be saying, oh, I think we did arms the last day or chest or whatever, and it's legs today. So you were actually, you know, asking me, empowering me, it's your choice, what kind of pain are you going to inflict on yourself today? And then they'll say, okay, I like this kind of pain, please. Right, let's bring it, you know. But like, I think that was, for me, that was very important in establishing the enjoyment of our early sessions, in that you weren't some sort of, you know, alpha male, dictatorial, do what I say, drill sergeant. That, like, you kind of were a team member with me. You knew what I wanted to achieve. You knew how to get there. And if I brought the, you know, the will, you'd get the results, of, you know, with the technique. And I think I felt very safe in that you were going to steer me where you wanted me to be, and it was where I wanted to be. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I think that's one of my styles. I like consulting with people on the strategy and then advise them. And this is actually what sticks really until now.
Yeah.
That I always ask, what would you like to do? Once we have certain rhythm, I don't ask, I'm just announcing, so it's legs today or it's back today. But sometimes when we have irregular sessions, I always ask clients, so what did you do for the last 2 weeks? Or what did you do until we met the last time?
Yeah.
So I know in my mind, okay, they trained chest twice, back once, and maybe legs zero, because they were doing classes like spin, so they were saving their legs. So I suggest, okay, well, if I look at your 2 weeks, your legs being sort of doing high repetitions, why don't we use this opportunity and work on something more advanced where you would need someone to supervise you and make sure that you're safe. And also, I like to basically use the more advanced training methods for those type of days where people can do stuff with me which they wouldn't do on their own. So I actually help them to learn. And also on the other side, if there's something which they're lacking, their weakness, I'm pointing to them. I actually, many times I say something which might be taken sort of like cheeky, but I'm trying to point to the fact that, look, this is your weak spot. And this is because of this. And because of this, you're risking this.
Yeah.
If you work on it, this is your benefits as well.
Yeah.
And actually, it will help you in the long term as well, because if you injure yourself, you won't be burning fat and building muscles either. You'll be actually gaining it quite quickly. So, you know, sometimes people prefer not to work on their weaknesses. It's just typical for humans, isn't it? But then they start to see how that weakness, which is frustrating to work on, because it's like, it's so painful to do this. It's so frustrating to go into this position, like full range squat, for example, as we mentioned, that we really lost the ability to do this full range squat, even as we were before.
Yeah. So we were talking earlier about, you know, the invention of the commodes and toilet seats, and, you know, that you're sitting down in just a seated posture, whereas naturally in the wild you do a full squat before defecating. And ultimately all those muscles are underutilized because of the way we just sit on the toilet seat now. And you know, that affects the internal passage of waste to your body and everything like that as well. So, yeah, this way, because I'm a biologist, I always kind of think, well, what have we evolved to do and what are we doing differently in modern lifestyle as a result of that? And, you know, they're usually the conflicts where they're eating, you know, artificial processed foods or, you know, we're not doing what our bodies were evolved to do. So the other aspect of being a good personal trainer is knowing how to make somebody exceed their own expectations of what they can achieve. So, like, how can you get a client to lift considerably more on a deadlift or, you know, a bench press than they think they can lift? Do you distract them? You use humor and you tell little stories to distract it. When you were distracting me anyway. And
yeah, I think one of my strategies is also to entertain, joke about, insult, and then sort of hug.
Yeah.
It's like a slap and hug in the same time.
Yeah. Because then you get the endorphin rush. What did he just say to me?
Sometimes when I see guys being less than average with their strengths in certain muscle groups, I was like, that's great. My granny used to lift more when she was 90. And that's my newest joke. Keep throwing jokes about, that's great. My wife lifts the same weight like you do.
So, like, when you're in the gym yourself, how do you make sure that you're not shortchanging yourself on, you know, lifting less than you can optimally lift? Or is that not a problem for you because you're kind of, you're a pusher?
I have a different problem. I'm a big pusher and actually it leads to injuries.
Okay.
I actually have a bigger problem of doing too much, too quickly and too often. And it will be usually my shoulders, my back, especially my rhomboids and traps, my elbows and knees and lower back would be the first to let me know I'm training too hard.
Yeah.
And it will be just painful. So actually, I would have the different problem. I would try too hard.
Mm. I suppose, like, you know, one of the key mistakes rookies make in the gym is they go through a movement. They might have proper form, but they do the whole process so quickly that they're not getting the optimal, you know, stimulation for muscle growth because they're just as opposed to 1, 2, 3 up, 1, 2, 3 down.
You see, there's a completely different approach to training when you start to understand time under pressure, proper engagement in a set position. So one of the key component it is to be able to set your body into the position that is strong, which is very, very safe for your lower back, particularly for your knees.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of mind to body connections to be able to lock on different floors.
Yeah.
And since we have so many different floors, imagine that you're standing, you have your calves, you have your thighs, you have your butt, you have your belly, lower back, you know, you have your chest, back, shoulders.
Yeah.
Everything is part of that sort of tower that if you try to do the shoulder press, it's not just shoulders pressing up. It's really whole body standing and being able to stay in that fixed position all the way through the execution of the exercise, of the movement. And then you have the active muscles, the contraction muscles, which goes shoulder, triceps, and upper chest, upper back. Mm-hmm. And then as you control the way down, it's the opposite muscle. So it's your basically biceps, forearm, your back as well. It's just the opposite of like lat pull down. So so if you start to understand that you're working out on the way up and you also work out on the way down. So concentric and eccentric movement is as important, if not even more important, because we know now that eccentric movement, which is the return of it, it's where we are stronger, around 20-40%. So we can actually handle eccentrically a little bit more tension. That's why many times when I train with my clients, I give them a heavier weight they would normally lift. I help them on the way down, let's say on lat pull down, help them on the way down because they wouldn't be able to lift it, but I let them to control it. Or I would just push on the machine from one side to be able to make it heavier on a return.
Yeah, I remember you doing that. You got so much pleasure out of doing that.
I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my job is really to find out where they can handle it safely. Yeah. So they don't end up with a session that is too hard for them, too inappropriate, and also not too easy. I want them to have a burn. I want them to have sweat. That's why I have to always look at, are they beginners? Are there people who are sort of intermediate? Are they advanced?
Mm.
Had them? Did they have long break in between the sessions where they're injured?
Mm.
And then, you know, old injuries, I have to always consider so much. That's why sometimes I take 3 hours of personal training sessions. I'm tired. I'm mentally drained because I'm not just hanging them, chatting with them, even though we do chat sometimes, but I try to be focused on them. I really observe so many different things they do. They're elbows alignment, their knees, their back, how they breathe, how they sweat, what their facial expression, how they feel. I keep always asking, how do you feel? Are you all right? You know, because I know it could easily be just a macho thing to say, you know, I'm okay, you know, but they might be hurting somewhere. So I really want them to trust me and to be able to express, like, you know, Otto, I think it's too heavy, or, you know, Otto, it's too light. I think I can do heavier. So I'm empowering everyone to be the captain. We are a team, you know. They hired me to be their trainer, but I'm not there to punish them for being fat, you know. I'm there to help them, to guide them in those different areas, and I think that's also where I stand out.
And as speaking as one of your traumatized clients, like, even when our sessions have stopped, I still hear your questions, and so the questions are quite useful in that not only you're asking at the time, but the client is actually looking for the answer to your question, and that becomes a habit that they try and do when you're not there. So, like, for example, you know, if I'm doing deadlifts, I hear your voice saying something like, you know, make sure the bar is very close to your legs and feet before trying to lift it up, because if it's far away, you'll screw your lower back or whatever.
You might.
Yeah. But, you know, if you keep it, you know, like, basically close to you, then you're much better at avoiding injury.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would benefit if they're interested to learn all about these big exercises like deadlift, squats, proper, let's say, dips, shoulder press, incline press, all these little things, techniques. I think that's where they should hire a personal trainer, good personal trainer who is experienced, who is really passionate about what they do.
Yeah.
And being able to coach them a good technique.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something generalized, because if somebody's listening to us who I don't have any access to, they should really look for the trainer that is in their area to be able to go through the exercises, because it's not the same just to watch videos. Because sometimes it is about person in that exact moment when they're tired, when they're under pressure, when they're mentally fatigued, maybe they didn't sleep well, they might do the deviation of the form they are not aware of, and there might be a small changes in their techniques when they are a little bit more tired. That's exactly the time when I would pinpoint to my client, actually, you were losing the form towards the last two repetitions. Not necessarily I will always stop them when they do that. Sometimes, yes, if I see the technique goes into sort of red zone, I tell them to stop immediately until we sort of reconsider their body position. So they are aware that, you know, I'm there to protect them as well from doing themselves self-harm. So then they start to learn, this is how it feels like when I'm in a good position. This is how it feels like when I'm not in a good position. And then by repetition, they know. Because I seen not many people are so body aware. They don't know when they're in plank that they're collapsing the lower back, that they're sticking the butt up, because they don't have a rear mirrors or cameras behind the head. And their body feelings through their sort of internal perception is not as accurate like somebody who played sports since they were very young, like me, for example. So I'm very much aware where my body is while I'm actually not seeing myself.
You've got good muscle memory for correct form.
Practice.
Yeah.
Practice.
So, like, somebody who hasn't done weightlifting before definitely needs to get a personal trainer who is a good personal trainer. So how would you advise people to choose a good personal trainer? Because as we know, there's mixed bag out there.
This is a very good question. Number one, passion.
Yeah.
Knowledge.
Yeah.
Good personality. Somebody you're gonna enjoy being around.
Right.
Somebody who really cares about other people.
Okay.
And also somebody who walks the talk. Somebody who is there as a good example.
Who looks athletic as well as talking athletic.
Who looks athletic, because you don't want to get advice. Well, you might. Mm. You might get advice, but I prefer if you don't, from someone who is overweight and you want to get weight loss.
Mm.
You can see that they are failing themselves.
Yeah.
If they, I believe personally,
yeah,
if they didn't find the motivation to get themselves to great shape.
Yeah.
And fitness is not the same like shape.
Yeah.
Because you can be very fit and healthy guy.
Yeah.
But you might be 2 stones overweight.
Yeah.
And that might reflect that they, maybe they don't care that much.
Yeah.
Maybe they think they're okay with it. It's just my personal advice. I would always want to have someone who is my role model.
Yeah.
What if I hire someone, if I will follow everything they say, I want to look at least like them, if not better, because I'm going to pull it myself to the next level.
You know, one of the ways I decided to pick you as a personal trainer, and then, you know, when I was abroad, pick other personal trainers, is I would go new into a gym and start using a piece of equipment in an incorrect way, deliberately, and then see who came over and said, you're using that. You might want to use it the other way here. Your elbow needs to be aligned with it. You know, the person who comes over voluntarily and tells you how to use the machine correctly is the person who's going to give you the most bang for your buck as a personal trainer. You know, because they feel, you know, even though I'm not their client yet, they still want to impart information to me, and they feel a responsibility towards my personal safety and the overall reputation of the gym, that they will step in even if we have no formal relationship, you know?
You see, with the new clubs, you could possibly ask someone. You know, some of these clients that I've got from guys from my membership department who recommended me, they were looking for senior personal trainer, someone who is good at what they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, even my colleagues would know who is the main man doing action. I mean, there are great guys out there. I work with so many talented guys and girls who are being very passionate about their work. But eventually, if it comes into actually making significant difference, it boils down to even more than just having good knowledge about your exercise or diet. It's also about having the personality to be able to listen people and to be able to tweak that psychology so they actually make impact on insight. And yeah, that's always been a little bit of my kind of goal to improve on that aspect. That's why I'm extremely sensitive in the sessions. I'm trying to observe and see and observe the sessions, how they evolve, and when people start to sort of shifting away from the sessions, and when people sort of, maybe they changed job and they had to quit, you know. So, yeah, I think that's the main one, to look or ask who is the most experienced trainer, or who do you think, ask someone from a staff, non-related, not the trainers, maybe a sales guys. Ask who is the best guy over here you would recommend me, because sales guy, you will look into the eyes of the guys who are at sales. And I said, look, I'm serious about having a personal trainer, but I want to have the best one that is in this club. Who do you think is the best over here? They always have one or two. Who is the most experienced? Who has the most clients? Who you can guarantee is going to be the best trainer for me?
So, yeah, they can be the best educated and they might have the best body, but also some degree of personal compatibility is important.
Absolutely.
As well, yeah.
Yeah. And that's something you could find out, let's say, observing the trainer during the classes.
Mm.
You can actually have the sense of what that personality would be like, even though in the classes all the trainers are a little bit more hyped.
Mm.
So, it's a little bit of, like, as someone I know would say, it's a little bit of a show.
Mm.
But again, it's a performance show, of course. Yeah. Yeah, it is. Especially when 30 people are looking at you.
Yeah.
You are their entertainer, you are their coach.
Yeah.
So, obviously, you know, and this is not to put sort of negative view on young trainers,
yeah,
because they also need to work with someone to get their experience.
Yeah,
but again, you know, it's just your thing. You might have a trainer who will be able to target exactly what you need.
Mm.
So it's not about someone who has 15, 20 years experience versus somebody who has 1 or 2 years experience. Mm. I think, are they passionate? Are they able to help you? Are they reliable? Are they creative enough with their sessions?
Mm.
It doesn't mean that they have to be super advanced sessions. Sometimes the basics are working the best. And if you also follow Charles Poliquin or Arnold Schwarzenegger, you can sense that they have very, very basic principles for training, but it's just the variables that they shift there, the methods, the time and attention, inverting those methods, sort of high volume, low volume, high intensity, low intensity, changing order of split routines. But even the young trainer would be able to make a good company to someone, because I know some people looking for someone that will be waiting there for them.
Mm.
I know a person who is actually my client, 75 years old man who plays golf. He really enjoys his lifestyle.
Mm.
He's sort of on diet and off diet, like two months and in cycles.
Mm.
And he always tells me life is for living.
Mm. Mm.
And, you know, it also gives me a good reminder that not everybody is there to lose a huge amount of weight.
Mm.
Maybe just maintain that sort of happy lifestyle in their 70s.
Mm.
And that just gave me big sort of, wow. Because I always felt, I feel like I'm just wasting, sort of, I'm wasted there. During the sessions, because we were doing easy stuff for upper body, because his hips and knees being replaced with artificial joints, and so the sessions being not very intense, we were more chatting. I was more just making him a company, and one day I told him, and he said, well, you know, although without you it's more likely I wouldn't be here, so actually I'm doing something because of you. So, and that is something which a lot of people might consider as well, to have somebody there. So it's not about how expertise they have. Maybe they have a personality to be around, and that's it.
And getting encouragement when you're going through the transition of becoming familiar with the gym and becoming familiar with how to use the equipment properly, having good form. I mean, another question that came to me was how you choose your own goals and how you choose, in collaboration with your clients, their goals.
Well, my goals, how do I choose them? I just want to have that final result. And for me, it always being the good old-fashioned mirror. You are sort of, you know, looking at your body and say, am I happy with myself looking like this? And quite honestly, I had always high expectations. I was always self-observant, and I always was thinking, yeah, that now I'm proud of myself, or I need to work harder. So it's for me, the motivation is as well the external, the appraisals and admiration. I think I started with it when I was a teenager, and I was very skinny, but I was a great runner. With my brother, we were two best runners in a couple of seasons when we were around 14, 15, 16 years old. We were the best runners there, and we would compete that much that during the sort of unofficial training session with our team, during 3 laps around the football pitch, we would be already half pitch away from everyone else, just two of us. That's how seriously we were competing, who's going to be the fastest. So that was serious stuff with my brother, and he's just 1 year younger. That's why I always had to prove that I'm the better, I'm the stronger, because I have 1 year more. So that actually was a huge part of me being sort of competing with someone else was my brother.
Sibling rivalry. I was the same with my two brothers. You know, it's natural, like, you know, to just as a boy to want to dominate your siblings.
Well, with your question, how do I set my goals and how I let them set the goals? Well,
like, for example, what are your goals at the moment? Like, do you, like, I suppose I want a sense of how, you know, specific and measurable and achievable they are. And,
well,
you know, what kind of time card?
My last sort of half year ago goal was to cut on the fat. So basically, I've been trying to put on size, and quite honestly, since I'm married, I gained around 8 kilos. From 72, actually 10 kilos. From 72, 73, I went to 83 almost kilograms, which was my heaviest. And I think quite significantly part of that gain was that not only the meals, but alcohol. I was actually consuming alcohol maybe too often. And that's actually what I stopped completely. And I'm very happy about that, because I just realized there wasn't any real deep satisfaction in long term. It's just really disturbed me and disrupted my sort of, you know, attempt to reach my goals. It was slowing me down. And I was clearly seeing that extra, you know, alcohol in my diet basically was getting me further away from what I wanted. And that what I wanted was actually quite nicely visible six pack. And I could see over the winter it was disappearing. And I wasn't very happy about it. So again, feeling guilty about myself, I set myself a goal. And after that goal, I set up a program, training program. I called it Cutting Phase, the Cutting Phase. I've got around 10 people into this program. All of my clients, it was very, very VIP type of approach to it. I only approach a few people with this because I wanted just a group of dedicated people I already know. And yeah, that was very interesting because we were doing fasted cardios in the morning. We were really, really, there was this sort of feedback. There was this communication between me and them, even privately between me and them during the sessions. And I could see how it spiked their motivation. But first thing, it was actually my idea was to help myself as well. So I wanted more cardio. So I said, well, let's make it as a program which can help more people. And I found it was partial success, because I could still not be able to change and influence people to be consistent more than I would expect them to be. So eventually I could see how the numbers been dropping over those 6 weeks. But anyway, you know, I'm not their parent. I'm not there to push them to do stuff. I have this sort of welcoming, inviting approach. If you don't want to do this, you know, why would you? So I actually have same principles for my clients. I mean, I ask them, hey, what do you want to do? What do you want to get? So if there's tone up, weight loss, maybe get the chest for guys, chest a little bigger, arms a little more toned. So, okay, well, that seems to me that you should be doing muscle building program because blah, blah, blah. And then after a while, you should be increasing your cardiovascular training. And this is how your diet should change as well. And then how it changed then when you started to do more cardio. So it depends on so many cofactors. And I always want to pinpoint small details for them. So they know that, okay, this is what it takes now, and then we're going to change the variables, and this is what you're going to do more. And I always like referring to my old experience with other clients, the success stories, also fail stories. I like to say fail stories as well. Like, look, I knew these people who just failed after a month. And I think this is why it happened. So I'm actually going to ask you if you are committed enough, because otherwise you're just wasting your money over here and time as well.
I think, like, one of the books that I read that you recommended to me was Build the Muscle, Burn the Fat. And there's a great chapter in that about setting up a goal sheet. So, you know, the first question you have to answer on your goal sheet is, you know, what you want to achieve, and then underneath that is, why do you want to achieve it? So it might be, you want to improve my fitness, or I want to show the world that I can expedite kind of a long-term lifestyle change, and that I have discipline, and, you know, all these kind of things. And it's kind of good to get the why down there, you know, like along with the what I want to achieve. And then they suggested that you pick a picture of somebody who's in the shape you want to be in and put that onto the goal sheet. And then after that, you put down all the minutiae of what program you're going to adopt and stuff like that. But they said, like, you know, when you look into the history, sports psychology, visualization is hugely important.
Yeah.
Because the unconscious mind doesn't discriminate between imagined thoughts and perceived thoughts from the outside. So if you imagine yourself winning the race, your body's kind of training for that mentally, and it'll make it more obvious to happen, you know, when it does come to expedite.
I read about it, and if, as far as I remember, I was always daydreamer. Mm. I was always just dreaming about how can I improve my life. And that actually what pushed me to move to another country, because I felt there's better lifestyle waiting for me.
Mm.
But with body composition, I always had this sort of visualization. It came to me always very natural. Even before I read any books on the topic, I always been sort of focusing about almost like dreaming. Ah, what it would be like if I look like this? And it just be my sort of self-image. But it same was, for example, when I was doing mountain biking, when I was racing on the bikes on the trails. And, you know, sometimes people say, you know, what if this happened? I'm like, well, I didn't even spend fraction of second to think about what could happen if I lose control on the truck. All of my 100% concentration always was where I want to go. There was no doubt. There was no doubt. It was just such a almost like meditative state where you forget the time. You basically concentrate so much, especially when you go on a bicycle down the track and you go 25, 30, 35 kilometers an hour. You know, if you do this misjudgment, you're going to hit a rock or trees or, you know, serious injuries. And, you know, you still want to win. You don't want to go like kind of like recreational. You are on the edge what the bike can hold. And, you know, in, that's why I like this type of sports is that it keeps you focused 100% of where you want to go.
Yeah.
And that's why so many people get so much distracted, because I think there's no urgency of falling and crashing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's so easy just to say, ah, you know what, friends, let's go to the pub. Let's skip the gym today. I think I'm too tired. There's no urgency.
Well, I think, you know, what you're speaking on there reminds me a lot of my own hiking experience. And, like, if you're not paying attention to the now while you're hiking, you're going
to Nepal,
you're not going to last very long. You're going to fall off the cliff, you know. And, you know, those kind of things, like extreme sports, they have their place in initiating a capacity to focus more on what you need to do right now. But I think there's an awful lot of people who get addicted to the, you know, the extreme sports. Like, you should be able to focus on the now in other elements of, you know, like less extreme sports, like, I don't know, golfing, for example. And, you know, being able to not overthink things and let your body, you know, put the ball in the hole or whatever. You know, like, a lot of athletes talk about getting in the zone, for example, and that they stop thinking consciously. And it's their unconscious, you know, more primitive side of them that knows what the body needs to do. And if they just, you know, come in with a kind of like a routine of like lining up their shoulders towards where they want the club to hit the ball or something, they don't think about, oh, I need to have this arm here, or, you know, it's a simple thing that is almost a you know, a meditation to stop them thinking about all the things that could go wrong, or, you know.
There was one description in one book that I read. I hope I will describe it correctly, but there are these four quadrants.
Yeah.
First, you start to do something, you are unconsciously incompetent.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you're shifting to the next one where you're consciously incompetent.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're starting to be unconsciously competent.
Yeah.
Sorry, unconsciously competent and then unconsciously competent.
Yeah.
That means that at the beginning, you don't know you do something wrong. Then you start to read about it and you know you're doing this wrong.
Yeah.
Then you start to think about it and you're doing it right. And you don't have, and then on the fourth phase, you don't even have to think about it and you're doing it right.
Yeah.
Like driving, like hitting that ball in golf or doing that exercise routine that comes naturally. So everybody in every area of their lives, these four quadrants comes first. You don't know what you don't know, and then you just flow so much that it just goes on autopilot.
Yeah.
But just only by repetitions and corrections and maybe even studying a little bit about topic, we can master that subject to such a level that it just goes, and you can't stop it, and you might even enjoy the process.
Yeah, you're bringing me on to one of the things you used to say. You know, I used to ask you, what is the best session to do in the gym? And your answer was the gym session you do. You know, in that you can have all the most amazing strategies in the world about how to get fitter, but without, you know, actually doing these sessions, nothing improves. And I suppose, do you ever go through phases of falling out of love with the gym, or are you always 100% engaged? And if you aren't 100% engaged, how do you get back in there again and keep the lifestyle?
Yeah, a couple of times in my life I sort of drifted. I really enjoyed gym when I was in my high school with the guys I used to train. I had a training buddy who we also did martial arts together, and also we were like best buddies for the gym as well, and it helped me a lot because I always knew there's somebody waiting for me to meet at that time. He was just living behind my apartment building, so we could easily meet in front of his, and then we had the gym only 150 meters from our homes, which was super convenient. And that helped a lot. I had also gym in my high school, so I could use that as well. But I preferred to go into our local gym in our town.
Yeah.
And I had free access to gym. Yeah. So it wasn't even that the money would be issue, because it was sort of city council's gym, and my mom was working for them.
She owned the council.
No, sorry. She was working for city council. Yeah. So as her son, I had free access to it.
Superb.
So we would actually have a keys and we would have the keys and being able to go there off hours in summer before. So at some stage I would be training twice a day, once in the morning, sort of lunchtime, then having food, then for afternoon going to the lake. That's Slovakian summer, unemployed students.
I
love that. So morning gym, afternoon swimming on the lakes, going with friends, then evening gym again. At around 6-7 we would do another gym, and then we would hang out with friends for a little longer later on in the
professional
athlete. I loved my summer holidays from my chemistry pharmacology, and then sort of when I moved to Ireland I stopped doing gym, and eventually after around half year, 7 months, we bought some equipment since we moved into a house which was bigger enough. We bought some equipment with my friend, and we've been working out for a few months, and I was getting some results. And then just because it's at your home, it's also something you could just stop doing, because it's not there was computer, there was fridge, there were computer games, so it was more attractive for me just to be lazy. And that was actually particularly that area of my life where I felt like, you know, I'm not just eating well, and everything was sort of falling down. And then I stopped doing it, and then eventually we sold it, and they stopped gym for a couple of years, and my main focus was running and hiking, and until I destroyed my knees really from that for a while, from all that pounding, running with a backpack, going downhill, and so I was really excited, but I was so skinny. And then eventually I met my friends back in Slovakia, And it motivated me so much, because when I seen these guys in such a great shape,
yeah,
they reminded me what I had.
Yeah.
And I had this sort of deep emotional, yeah, I want to do this.
Yeah.
And since then, the fire is on, and it's already around 6.5, 7 years. Seven years, roughly.
Yeah.
And that was the best decision I made. These are the same guys who are now personal trainers.
Yeah.
They sort of inspired me through their Facebook, because I could see how one of these guys, he being quite chubby,
yeah,
and he came back to Slovakia, he became ripped, he's just legendary.
Yeah.
And these two guys being my biggest influence to become, yeah, a professional personal trainer.
Yeah.
And since then my motivation is so high that, you know, I'm just really, the only thing that I'm considering is to feel my body being recovered. If it's not recovered, I won't be training, yeah, in the gym, my days off. But, you know, during our classes, like body pump or, yeah, even Les Mills trip, for example,
yeah,
I go 100% into it. I don't, yeah, go like 60% to save myself for rest of my day.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm knackered after the session and I'm, yeah, I'm talking to people. I'm like, wow, I'm destroyed.
Yeah.
But I feel good afterwards. So,
yeah,
you know, I think the main thing was to get that sort of desire to perform.
Yeah.
And I know for that body that I want, for that feeling of being strong, it's not only about the look, being able to lift heavy, being,
yeah,
able to sprint, being able to be somewhat like a universal soldier.
And just, you know, being tight in your clothes as well. Isn't,
yeah,
it? You know, nothing's jiggling and, yeah, you know, you're solid.
And that motivates me.
Yeah.
And now the main thing is just to not to overdo it, because I do everything with a little bit of addiction.
So, you know, like then you could think of other things that are like, you put me on rowing when I was first started in your program.
I want to punish you.
Well, no, rowing was great.
Just
because,
joking.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But like, instead of putting me on a treadmill where a lot of strain would have been put on my knees, you put me on the rowing, which is basically all upper body and legs as well. So
upper and lower body. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no impact.
Yeah.
It's a big compound. It's working two biggest, strongest muscle groups.
Yeah.
So you're going to stimulate the growth hormone and testosterone a little bit more.
Yeah.
You're going to also work a little harder than on treadmill.
Mm.
And I'm 100% aware of anyone who is overweight, possible problems with their knees, lower back, hips, ankles. So I'm actually, because I had my own experience with knee injury, I'm quite aware of how easy it is to hurt the knee. I had the back issues. I had problem with my elbow, with my shoulder, with my wrist. Did I mention, well, I had ankles and hips. So I know how it can lead to injury. I experienced those tightness in the muscles. I experienced those inflammations in tendons. That's why anytime I see someone, let's say other trainers, make other fairly overweight clients jump plyometric jumps on the boxes up and down, I'm like, I wouldn't do that. You know, it's like having a sport car and you race through these retarders on the road.
Just go and get
this boom, big impact.
Yeah.
I'm big on avoiding that. So if there's something which is low impact, great, go for it. Your joints will last longer, obviously.
And then what kind of things do you do to improve joint mobility and, you know, the longevity of your joints? Do you have any specific tips there?
Yeah, I do actually, because my mobility was very poor, and actually part of it was that I was racing on the bicycles. I was runner before gym and martial arts. My muscles tend to be fairly tense and tight. So I would say after cycling, that was the period of a couple of years, maybe 4 or 5 years, where I would be cycling a lot, maybe 4 or 5 times a week. I would go out on the trails, and some of them would be very long trips as well. I would just tiny bit, little stretch at the end, little stretch. But, you know, this is like racing your car, and then you spend, you know, like you just, you know, you
don't
just
change the oil.
You just clean it out from outside.
Yeah,
you know,
you don't
change your bearings. You don't check pressure in the wheels. You don't, you know, do anything with the engine. So I think just by focusing on that, I end up with a problem. So mobility was something which I worked gradually, but one of the biggest was yoga.
Yeah.
I had back pains and also when I had knee pains, I think the yoga helped a lot. And, you know, being able to squat in the full range is already where you have to stretch. And I've been following a couple of guys like Kelly Starrett from San Francisco, who wrote the book Becoming a Supple Leopard. So just to make this right, Becoming a Supple Leopard. He was explaining this very well, and it was all clicking in my head in the right places. Then in the same time, when I was following for a while Conor McGregor, I actually just figure out a couple of methods. I actually test them with clients. They've been working. I was, aha moment. These mobility exercises, full range squats. And then I see his mobility coach, Ido Portal. He was teaching the same principles, how to mobilize the joints. I'm like, wow, these are already two occasions where I figure out something just before I get it confirmed from the books. So I kind of felt that, you know, after those years working on my own problems, I'm learning how to solve other people's problems. And, well, obviously there are people who already done this before, so we don't have to reinvent the wheel. But I think if you do something long enough, you're going to figure it out.
And I suppose, that's an interesting one. I mean, sometimes the self-discovery is a motivator in and of itself, you know. You might know everything from a book, but when you discover it yourself, it's yours.
It's self-empowering. Because you know that you didn't need that extra, you know, helping hand from someone. That you actually being sort of in tune enough. So I think just because I start to figure out a few things, I more believe in what I do. And that's empowering as well. That builds your confidence. And you know that this is not something you're copying from the book. Like imagine that you just finished your personal training course and you're following some books, what they say. You only can believe that it's right. And there's a lot of things being changed for the last decades, and we start to have deeper understanding of biomechanics, and there's more research out there. So things are changing, but I think it's good to be in tune and just not following the fad diets and not following follow my training program. And you know, it's complex process, but you know, sometimes we just come across so much bullshit that, you know, only experienced person can really smell it.
Yeah. Well, that's just, you know, if it's changing every month, it's obviously not the truth, because we're, you know, we've evolved and we're still the same as we were last year, and still got the same lungs, same, you know, muscles and everything else. So if it worked for somebody 100 years ago, it'll probably work for you today. And cool.
Interesting. Well,
thanks very much, dude.
My pleasure, Stephen.
Okay.